It's a pleasure and an honor to be here with you tonight. I personally have so much to thank him for. And many of you, all of you that sit here tonight are part of that reason. And I thank you. I thank you for the privilege you have given me through the years and tonight to be part of your lives and to be able to say that there's no place I'd rather be than Greenville, Tennessee, even though I live in Indianapolis. And if you guys would move up there, it might help. I don't know, though. My kids, if I get them moved down here, we would. I'm going to read out of Matthew, the 13th chapter, the 45th and 46th verses. And the sermon title is A Search for a Superior Treasure. A Search for a Superior Treasure. As Ruth and the group were singing, I began thinking about the songs that were being said, the idea that we have so much to thank him for, and do you know how it feels? Now, a lot of people, they see an old preacher. I'm not that old, but I'm 64, and there's Gail's older than I am, I know that, and there's a few of the others of you that are, but they see an old preacher and they say, man, they've lived all their, pastored 35 years, and what in the world? Now, some of you have been around where I've shared some of what I'm going to share tonight, and but I wanted to go over this so that you would understand that when I start talking about a superior treasure, I really know what I'm talking about. Okay? I really know what I'm talking about. Just last Sunday, I entered a revival in Coshocton, Ohio. Some of you may remember that Coshocton, Ohio is where a friend of mine that I ran the streets of East Dayton, Ohio with, his name is Duke Young. His real name's Lewis, but they always called him Duke. That was the name he went by. Duke had gone to Vietnam in 67 time frame. He was a Marine. He came back. Today they would have diagnosed him with PTSD as well as alcoholism at the age of about 19. And Duke's life was a mess. Now, he left Dayton, Ohio because he killed two guys in a fight in the streets of Dayton. There was four or five of them jumped on him and his brother, and he told me, he said, I saw we were losing the fight, so I pulled my gun out and shot two of them in the head. Killed one of them immediately, and the other one is spending the rest of his life in a nursing home. Duke and I and his brother and some of the other guys we ran around with, the streets were a place that we just ran. And life was filled with nothing but anger and hatred. The issues of alcohol was always into play. Never ate chili till I sat down at his mother's house, and she'd cooked chili, and we had chili and beer that night. And I was 15 years old. That was the norm. That was every day. That was the norm. At 17, I knew more than any of the school teachers that I went to school with. And I went to, my mother was afraid about where my life was heading and agreed to sign the paperwork for me to go in the Army. And at the age of 17, I went in the Army. At the age of 18, I went to Vietnam. At the age of 18, after about 6.5 months in country, I was wounded, almost killed. Spent 2.5 months in the hospitals. They finally shipped me home. And I met this, I knew her. I'd grown up really with her in certain senses Ruth used to come to our house, and she would eat dinner with my sisters, all of us, and she'd come home from church with my sisters. And I said, I was a church kid. Understand this. I was a church kid. I went to church from my earliest memories and paid no attention, Brother Nathan, as you preached this morning about people who sit in the pew, and but they have no relationship. I can relate. I didn't care, though. I mean, I cared nothing about God. I cared nothing about God. And, but this redheaded girl named Ruth McCorkle, who became Ruth Rudd, attracted me. And two things that attracted me about her was her red hair, and she was fun to be with. Now, you got to keep in mind, everybody I ran around with, all they did was fight and scratch. All they did was fight and scratch all the time. That was it. I've been beat up. I've been bleeding. When you're 135 pounds and 5 foot 9 and think you can whip everybody in town, you're wrong. You're wrong. But Ruth was enjoyable. But I still had all this anger and all this hatred. I wouldn't have cared about you if I'd have met you in the street. You could have talked about God, wouldn't have bothered me one way or the other. One way or the other. We got married. Ruth had two children when we married from a previous marriage. And we went to North Carolina. And I was still in the 82nd Airborne Division. And we spent 7 months there and came back. I finally got a job in a foundry. And life had no meaning. And there was nothing to it. Nothing to it. Ruth wanted me to go to church, and I'd spent all my life going and not paying attention. And so I said, no problem. I'll go with you. I can think about other things while that preacher's preaching and while they're singing and all that kind of stuff. And one night, sitting in a pew, in March of 1973, the Lord broke through all of those things. All the garbage, all the anger, all the hatred. And he saved me. He saved me. Gloriously saved me. I remember it like it was yesterday when I heard the voice of God. Now, whether it was audible in my mind, you can say anything you want. I don't care what you call it. He spoke to me. And I heard him say, and this is not theologically sound. I understand that. And maybe God just got the theology wrong on it. I don't know. But he just said, son, I've done all this for you. Now what have you done for me? And that clicked. And that clicked. 2 years later, I began preaching. I told my pastor, I said, God's called me to preach. He said, okay, have a sermon next Wednesday night. That was Sunday. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's how it was done there. Yeah, And I thought I'd be there forever. And eventually I went to Pekin, Illinois and pastored for 21 years and was privileged to come here for 13 years and so many months and be with you. And so when we sing the song, I've got so much to thank him for. And we sing the song, Do You Know How It Feels? I want to jump up and go, yeah, yeah, I do. I really, really do. I get it. I get it. I get it. In this particular account, you're going to hear a man that really gets it. You're going to see a little bit about him. Matthew 13, 45, 46. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, who when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. Sold all that he had and bought it. There's somebody, I forget who said these words. He said, a lot of people live their life with a pig philosophy. He said, it's like this. If you've ever fed pigs, and some of you here have, and others of you will not have had that privilege in your life. I know that. But I have fed pigs at my relative's house in Kentucky. And if you take... You have a box for them to eat out of, some kind of trough, and you pour a bunch of corn into it. Corn that's still on the cob. Fill corn, pour it in. There's one pig that will grab an ear of corn and go running off. And some of the other pigs will see that one pig run off with that ear of corn. And they'll chase him to get that ear of corn, when right there in the trough is a treasure full of corn for them. That's how many people live their lives. We hear about the movie stars. We hear about the individual that has wealth, the Donald Trumps. We hear about all the politicians, the Obamas, and we look at all their things, and we look at people around us, and some of you have friends that do well in a certain thing, and you think that if you can just get that, if you can chase after that, you will have your life filled up with the wonders of what it means to have a treasure that's above everything. And you live with a pig philosophy. A pig philosophy. The treasure is not there. The treasure rests somewhere else. This individual was going out, and his job was buying pearls, evidently. That's what he did. And he went out, and he was looking for pearls, and he found one that was worth more than anything else. He found one that was worth more than anything else. And he stopped chasing all the others. My friend, let me say this to you tonight. If you do not know Christ, you're chasing a bunch of garbage for your life. You're chasing treasures that will melt when eternity comes. Let me tell you a couple things about this guy. First off, this guy had a higher purpose in his life. He came to realize that he had a higher purpose. A lot of people do not understand that. See, they live their lives seeking the things that they want, and they think that's what life is all about. They look for the things that make them happy, the right guy, the right girl. Now, some of us have been fortunate enough to find somebody in our life that would put up with us. And that's true for most of you guys. And it's true for a number of you ladies too. Yeah. Now, some people have not done that. And their lives are filled with one broken relationship after another. Others of you think that if you can just chase after a certain whatever it is, that it will satisfy your life. And you live life at such a lower level. You are, it's like you have fool's gold and gold, and you chase fool's gold. You look for it, you hunt it up, you think it's the most important thing there is, and you miss out on the higher purpose. Friend, God has a higher purpose for you in your life. He wants you to be able to know the wonders of what it's like to be a man or woman of God that lives in this world for Him. Because you see, if you do not live in this world for Him, rest assured, you will not live in the next world for Him. Oh, no. I know that there's last-minute salvation. I understand that. I get that. But generally speaking, let me tell you, if you don't get it right now, you're not going to get it right. If you think you're going to do something at the last second of life, let me tell you how quickly life goes if you do not understand this. The day I was wounded, we had walked into an area of high brush that was about chest to head high. We had found a spider hole tunnel complex entrance, and me and another guy went in to open it up. And they waited till we put our hand on the entrance, and they rolled a hand grenade out on us. And then they threw out four more hand grenades, and then they came out. And in the space of 3 minutes, 3 minutes, seven men were dead, and 11 were wounded. So don't tell me that you got extra time. Don't tell me that you're going to come along and just before you die, you're going to say, "Oh, God, forgive me." Now, I understand that for some people it could happen. It could happen. But for most people, it will not happen that way. The guy that's driving down the road and doesn't see the semi run the red light. The individual that is walking to work or going to lunch and has a massive heart attack and instantly they die. Don't tell me about how much time you'll have then. If you don't get it right now, you won't get it right. You will have expended your life for something that's worth far less than what you could have had. Let me show you a picture of this. At least a somewhat of a picture of this. Abraham leaves the land of Ur, and he has his nephew Lot with him. Now, they stay together for a period of time. And their herds are growing, and pretty soon it produces problems because all the herd keepers have to find some place for these sheep and cattle to graze. They have to find enough water for them. It produces tension. And finally, Abraham says to Lot, "You pick which way you want to go." And Lot says, "I'll take the valley." I don't know if you know it or not, but the valley is usually the best place. Did you know that? I mean, that's where the water goes to. The water comes off the mountains, goes down in the valley, hits a stream somewhere, comes down in the valley, usually goes down another stream, and it waters all of that land out there. And the sheep would have plenty of grass to eat and other herbs that are out there, and they would be able to grow fat. The wool would grow on their bodies. They'll make money. He would be wealthy. And we find the picture of Lot later on in the city of Sodom and Gomorrah. And when he leaves the city, he has three things with him. His wife, his two daughters. And his wife turns around and looks back, and she doesn't leave. He's called a man of faith, and I understand this concept, but let me tell you what. If he had it to do over again, which direction you think he might have chosen? See, everything that looks like it's the best is not the best. So, gals and guys, when you find some individual that you think is going to be the wonderful person for your life, you better pay attention. Here, let me give you a secret. If they're a jerk before you marry them, they'll be a jerk after you marry them. Yeah. Oh, yeah. If they're dumb, now, This is one of the truths of life, folks. Salvation doesn't change dumb. Okay? Now, if you can live with dumb, that's okay. You know, it might be one of those dumb and dumber things. I don't know. But you see that picture, that's what happens in life. And people invest themselves in the things that they think are going to be so wonderful, and they miss out on the true treasure. Listen to how, and by the way, most people think, well, I'm pretty good. Let me give you a picture out of Ephesians 2. And I'm reading out of the Message in verses 1 through 3. It says, it wasn't so long ago that you were mired in that old stagnant life of sin. You let the world, which doesn't know the first thing about living, tell you how to live. I love that statement. You let the world, which doesn't know the first thing about living, tell you how to live. Go out and get drunk one day and puke your guts out the next day and tell me how wonderful it is. Oh, I'm glad I went out last night. We had a good old time. Get arrested for drunk driving and go downtown and have them stick you in jail and tell me how wonderful it is. And you listen to these guys and gals say, let's have a few. Let's go out and have a good night. And you think, they don't know the first thing about living. Let me tell you about living life. Oftentimes, I think I'm right in saying this, but oftentimes, and you may not agree with what I'm going to say, but oftentimes I think many people don't know about living life till you see somebody die. Most of you have heard me tell the story, my mother dying of cancer. Doctor said, stop the treatments. We sat as a family together and discussed it. And finally, I looked at my mother and I said, Mom, what do you want? And by this time, the cancer had touched the brain where it was so difficult for her to put everything together. She finally looked at us and said, the only thing I want is for my kids to go to heaven with me. She showed me how to live in her dying. What? All the treasures you seek? All the treasures you seek? Will they be worth anything in eternity? You say, well, wait a minute, we got to live now. Yeah, but learn how to live. Quit listening to the world. Let me tell you, the right toothpaste isn't going to fix your life. You're still going to be a mess. You may have a bright smile, but you'll still be a mess. It doesn't change it. Listen as he continues. You filled your lungs with polluted unbelief and then exhaled disobedience. We all did it. All of us doing what we felt like doing when we felt like doing. All of us were in the same boat. It's a wonder God didn't lose his temper and do away with the whole lot of us. Now that, brothers and sisters, let me tell you, I think that's a very accurate statement. It's a wonder. You think your righteousness is great? God says it's filthy rags. You know, our problems oftentimes is we compare ourselves to the person next to us rather than the Savior who bought us. Well, this man found a higher purpose for his life. And he found the highest possible purpose. He didn't settle for just anything. He didn't settle for just good. You know, it's good to raise your kids. Folks, I joke a lot about, you know, it's nice to have the kids out. And that part's probably not a joke, but it is. It's nice to have them move out. Hey, you kids, you grow up, you need to get out. I mean, hey, Mom and Dad don't need to take care of you the rest of your life. They invested a fortune in you. Get up and get with it and get a job and go do your thing, man. Now, that being said, there's nothing like the kids and the grandkids. They're better than the kids. You grandparents all know that. I mean, the grandkids, my granddaughters are wonderful. I mean, they're my grandson, he's just more, five granddaughters, one grandson. They're great. Right? There's nothing wrong with them. I mean, they're perfect. And now their parents, I don't know about that. But I think the reason the grandkids are like that is because of the influence Ruth and I have had upon them. But this guy had been seeking goodly pearls, and we'd found one pearl of great price. He went and sold all of it, all that he had. One man said, we are morally responsible for the choices we make in our fallen world, often choosing between relative goods and lesser evils. Our duties in exile are shaped by the choices we have, not by the choices we wish we had. And then the political commentator Charles Krauthammer said, has said, there are no moral foxholes. You got to make your choice. But let me tell you this. Living for God is not just about your choices. As a matter of fact, we do not read in the Bible where it says faith, hope, and love, and choice. And the greatest of these is choice. And we live in a society that's filled with the issue of choice. You know, go down and it's a disaster to go to Walmart and look at deodorant. I thought you were just supposed to find something that kept you from stinking, you know. And all these things are there. And I'm looking at them, and I look at them, and I'm going, you know, this is how I'd like to choose. You know, and forget about it. I mean, just get something and get out. And if it doesn't work, get something else the next time, you know. And it's just crazy. But we think that choices is the sole issue of why we exist. And it is not. There are higher purposes for you. You and I have to grasp that the greatest purpose we can have is to be servants of the Most High God. There's no greater purpose in life. Do you realize Revelation 4:11 says, the writer speaking to Jesus, "For thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy sake they are and were created." You were made for Him. You were made for Him. You weren't made for you. You were made for Him. And so every time you look at life and you say, "I want this," then you have missed the greater purpose. The greater purpose is to see what He wants. The greater purpose is to determine what He would have you to do. The greater purpose is to find out how He would have you treat others. You see, it's about Him and it's not about you. It's not about me. And so when we deal with all the choices, then maybe we ought to ask ourselves, is what choice would Jesus make? What would He want? What would He desire? What would He want us to have, to do, to be? And if you do that, my, you'll find out what living is like. I worked for General Motors in and Ralph, you can relate to this. I know you worked for General Motors in Dayton, Ohio too. Worked for General Motors in 78, the year of 1978, I made $23,000. Now, today, $23,000 doesn't sound like anything. Go back 40 years. Now, I worked overtime for it. Didn't like it. $43,000. And God called us to pastor a church, and we made $12,000 that first year. We had about 50%. $12,000. But you know something? I wouldn't trade it for anything. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I could have a better retirement. Actually, let me show you a picture of how God works. IUE is the union for General Motors. For Delco Products, and a subsidiary of General Motors. And when GM went bankrupt here a few years ago, UAW is UAW-IUE. The UAW negotiated how all this stuff would work out with them. And they wrote the IUE out. And every person there that had their retirement through the IUE lost it all. Lost it all. If I'd stayed working there, you know how much I'd be getting? Zero. I'm getting zero right now, so it doesn't matter. Haven't applied for Social Security yet. So, but you see, the issue is that when God calls and He places His hand on you and He tells you to do, to be, to go, that's always the best place there is. That's always the best place there is. When the disciples were on the boat in the Sea of Galilee and the storm was going on and they woke Jesus up and said, "We're going to die," they're crazy. They're the safest place in the world. They were with Jesus. Man, there's no safer place for you than the spot that Jesus wants you, because He will be with you there. The best place. Well, let's go on. This man also obtained the superior treasure. Now, I pray that you here understand what I'm going to say. You don't get Jesus on bargain basement prices. He found the goodly pearl, the best pearl, and He gave everything, everything. And let me just simply say this to you tonight. And most of you already know this, no doubt. Friend, if you won't give everything to Jesus, He won't take part of you. I know. A lot of people, they seem to think that they can live their life halfway in and halfway out. They can let Jesus have this part, but not this part. They can let Jesus guide them in their spiritual things, but don't mess around with my regular things of life, Jesus. And I tell you this, you may feel good about yourself when you sing Amazing Grace, but you don't have it. You don't have it. Jesus doesn't accept bargain basement prices. You can't get Him like that. You cannot have Him. Listen, I'm going to read to you a section out of the book of Luke where Jesus talked about discipleship. And I want you to hear this. Which, by the way, Jesus talked about disciples. Didn't talk about converts. We've got it all backwards. We talk about converts. How many people have you had converted at your congregation this year? I really don't know. You see, He's the one that saves people. A person can come to the altar, they can say, "I love Jesus," and they don't. But I don't know their heart. A person can sit in the pew and get saved in the pew. And everybody says, "Well, they didn't do it the way I did." Well, bless you. Now, I just would like to know the scriptural verse that says everybody has to do it like you do it. Dave Atchison, my good friend, got saved in his living room, kneeling by his couch. My daughter got saved kneeling by her bed. Now, which one's not saved? You have to kneel by the bed or the couch? Listen, Luke 14. If any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children, brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. That's harsh. That's harsh. Whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. So likewise, verse 33, so likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. So don't think that Jesus is just going to say, oh, it's okay. I know that was too hard for you to really, really give up, fill in the blank. It was just too hard for you. That's okay. Won't happen. My wife, she didn't like me going to church so much. Really? I understand. Jesus won't, but I understand. Because he said very clearly, you don't hate, and that's not I hate you type thing. This is talking about a lesser kind of love. You love Jesus above everybody else. You love Jesus to the extent that it looks like they say, why won't you do what I want? You must hate me. I don't know if you've ever heard that or not. You don't really love me. You won't go with me too. You won't do this. You don't love me. Well, bless your heart. Here's what Jesus says. If you don't give everything you have, if you don't love him the most, friend, you can't be his disciple. And if you're not his disciple, you won't go to heaven. Period. No, that's not my decision. It's not my decision. It's his decision. It's not what I think. It's what he said. And see, some people don't matter church as long as it's not too demanding. You know, just don't expect a lot out of me, preacher. You know, I'll come for this, but I won't come and be part of anything else. And by the way, I don't think everything that Christians do should take place in the building. But preacher, you know, I'm just not going to do all of those things. You know, I'm too busy. Really? Now, you don't understand my situation in life. You don't get what I go through. I don't. I'll just be honest with you. I don't. I just know what Jesus said. If you don't forsake all that you have, you cannot be his disciple. I mean, I think that's kind of plain. I remember going to the military. They marched us down. I had hair down to my shoulder. Well, not quite my shoulder, below my collar. And I didn't quite make the shoulder. I tried to grow it as long as Michaela's, but I didn't have enough time. And so I had that long hair, I remember going to Cincinnati after they did the physical and all the other things. Boom. You swear to uphold the Constitution, blah, blah, blah. Yep. Had no clue what that meant. And I didn't go to school like some of you. I quit when I was 17 the second time. The first time I was 16 and only finished up half my junior year. Went back and went for two more months, or a month maybe. They didn't know I was supposed to be there, so I didn't go afternoons. You know, they didn't know. I didn't care. So I didn't go. And so I went down, held up my hand, did all that. And they marched me after they drove us. They got us down finally to South Carolina. And they got us in the area where they get you to look like you're part of the Army. Everything green. Chris, they don't do green anymore, do they? No, you don't know. Yeah. But, they do all the digital camel stuff and all that. Back then, it was just solid green. OD green. Olive drab. And it was olive drab. Let me tell you. You know, they got us all in they gave you these bags and everything. And then they marched you down to the barber shop. And when we got there, I said, guys, you know, this military stuff's okay, but I'm not getting my hair cut. You know, you take me with my long hair or not at all. It didn't happen like that, let me tell you. They sat me down in the barber chair and vroom, 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 and it was all gone. I looked like David Jeffellers. And, that's how it went. You didn't get choices on that. Now, don't you think when God says, if you don't forsake all you have, you can't be my disciple? That means that the choices are removed, and it means life is given to him. You believe him. You believe that he's the greatest treasure you could ever have. There's nobody better. There's nowhere else you can go that you can receive what he can give you. He is the one that provides everything most wonderfully and gloriously given in your life. Now, as you get older, let me tell you, I think I understand that more and more and more and more. Because I'm on the downhill slide of life. You know, at least as far as averages are concerned. I'm on a downhill slide of life. Every day I get is a good day. You know, does something ache? Sure. I don't know anybody that doesn't have something that aches. I mean, some of you young folks don't know what aching is. But, man, you know, I have things that hurt, never hurt before. But it's a good day. Got up. Ruth cooked me my hot breakfast, put the cereal in the microwave, and we I probably ought not to have said that. But, you know, life is good with Jesus. Because I saw Duke and his brother Bill. Hadn't seen his brother Bill in 40, almost 50 years. Bill is on dialysis. He weighs about, he used to be like that, you know, skinny. I kept my girlish figure, but he hasn't. He's 300 pound maybe, big old beard. Looked like he'd been wore out, you know. Duke is still Duke. Now, this is what he says. I hope I do go to hell so I can meet the devil and kill him. Now, he thinks more highly of himself than he ought to think. If it were possible, then that would mean that he would become the devil, because there is an eternity and there is a devil and there is a hell. How do you think like that? A life accepting less. A life accepting less. Spend your life buying all the treasures that are not worth anything. Slip through your fingers when you could have had the best. I ask you tonight, what kind of treasure do you have? Father, the name of your Son, I pray that every one of us would consider that.